Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host
Niñas Bien podcast. We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey everyone, Michael Anthony here. Van Halen, Chickenfoot, Sammy in the Circle. But anyway, you're listening to the only podcast that is dedicated to breaking down the entire Van Halen catalog one track at a time. And the podcast will rock. Ow!
Hello, baby!
Welcome, all in one and one and all. It's a bit redundant, don't you think? Whatever, it's all good. What is up, all you rockers, rockets, and everything in between, all inclusive here on And the Podcast Will Rock. That's right. Welcome back to the show, everyone. We're here to talk all things Van Halen. And if it's your first time to the show, if you just stumbled across it somehow after all the episodes that we've done, first I'll say welcome, and I'll say that's really interesting that you found us at this point in the journey, but we'll accept it. What we do here is we are the show that dive into the catalog and discography of one of the greatest rock and roll bands of all time, the aforementioned Van Halen, and we do it one track at a time. And right now we are in single digits in terms of what's left in the catalog, so that's how far along we've gone in this journey. And but we're happy to have you regardless of where you are in your journey with us. I am your co-host Mark Kamire, with me as always Corey Morissette. Corey, how you feeling? Is spring in the air in the Great White North, or is it still just a cautionary blizzard every 5 hours?
Spring is already come and gone. We had spring on Monday. It was plus 14, which, I don't know, in Yankee measurements would be like probably the 80s. I'm assuming pretty nice day. You know, it's like shorts and t-shirt weather. You know, we almost went out on the deck. That was one day, and now we're back down to minus 12 again. So we've already had our spring. We're now in fifth winter. So hopefully fifth winter will only last for the next 2 months, and then we can get into fall summer, and then summer for that 1 week in July, and then back into fall for a day, and then winter again.
You are experiencing what we call in the South the false spring. Yep. In which, you know, we get one day where it feels really great, and it feels like, oh, hey, the seasons are acting accordingly. This is great. followed by just massive amounts of coldness. And I can't imagine. I can't imagine how cold it is up there. And it's funny that you guys call us Yankees when you're farther north than we are. But, you know, that's...
We're hosers.
What are you going to do?
We're so far up, we're hosers. Yankees, I think, stops right at the border. So, yeah. But
that is true.
With our one-day spring also comes pothole season. So it's actually treacherous to drive around anywhere right now without bottoming out your car and completely wrecking your wheel alignment or worse. So,
yeah. Ask any Nashville native what that's all about, because for whatever reason, our roads cannot stay without potholes. So I imagine you guys up there dealing with it even worse because the weather is so much worse. So I don't envy that, but I do wish you a hearty, warm spring when it finally decides to show up and stay put. Now that we've got weather talk out of the way, I feel like there's a lot to discuss in Van Halen news, wouldn't you say?
Oh, there really is. And we even got a few things that aren't even on the Van Halen news desk that I'll bring up first.
Scoop, you say?
A little bit of a scoop. My old buddy, Darren Paltrowitz, who was on the show not that long ago. Of course, he's the guy who wrote the book on David Lee Roth, does the DLR cast, sent me a Sammy Hagar press release. I haven't seen this on the Van Halen news desk yet, but rock legend and lifestyle trendsetter Sammy Hagar to debut Sammy's Island at Palms Pool, a lively oasis featuring Baja-inspired cocktails, food, and live music. That's going to be happening at the Palms Casino in Las Vegas. So Scott Heskin, I'm pretty sure I saw you in the chat. You'll have to go check this out. This summer, starting on May 17th, you can go to a Sammy's Island, a tropical pool getaway inspired by the music and Baja Beach vibe of the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. So you can go get your Sammy's Beach Bar rum, your Sammy's Beach Bar cocktails, your Santos spirits. There's going to be some Top Chef tequila and in partnership with celebrity chef and noted Frosted Tips enthusiast Guy Fieri. If you find yourself, in Las Vegas, during the summertime here, they're going to have food too. You can get yourself a Baja Up for Breakfast burrito. It's actually just a breakfast burrito. I had the Up for, but they're really missing an opportunity there. There's chicken tinga nachos, chicken wings, Veracruz chopped salad, all sorts of good stuff. Sammy's having a heck of a year. He's opening that in Vegas. Then he's going to get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame on April 30th. And then, of course, the Best of All Worlds tour kicking off in 2024. And, Mark, I'll get your thoughts on Sammy's little casino jaunt here before we get back into the Best of All Worlds tour, because I got a little something there, too.
It sounds like it's Flavor Town in Vegas this summer. So, get on over there. That sounds like a blast. If there was ever a time for me to go visit Vegas, even if it's just to not really hang out and play the craps tables and just, lounge around drinking what I assume will be an abundance of Cabo Wabo tequila. Mm-hmm. By the by, if you haven't had it, it's delicious. It's great. So that sounds like a great time. Haskin, if you're going, you're going to have to be there in the spirit for all of us, because you'll probably get there before we do. But that does sound like a fun time, man. I'm going to have a conversation with the fiance about this.
You have a wedding coming up, right?
Next year. Yeah, next year. We do.
Oh, so, because they do marriages in Las Vegas on the quick. So if you guys just want to forget all of that wedding planning, I know how stressful that can be. Just head down to Vegas, get married by a David Lee Roth impersonator, and
oh god, no, not with Christy. She's a Sammy guy. She's on record saying she is much more of a Sammy person. So if anything, we'll have to maybe we'll run into the Red Rocker and we'll coerce him. You're like, look, man, I do a Van Halen podcast. You know the Bogus Otis boys, like they've been on the show. We're friends. Mm-hmm. It's all good. It's all family. What do you say, Sammy? You wanna marry me and my wife? My fiance, you want to marry us? We'll toast some Cabo Wabo and have a great time. I think it's a foolproof plan. I think we could do this.
Oh, easily. Yeah. So here's hoping that happens for you. But are you and Christy still looking at checking out the Best of All Worlds tour when it comes to your neck of the woods?
We are. Sidebar to that, I am sad to report I missed the Extreme show. That happened in Nashville. Well, there was just circumstances out of my control and things happened. I did hear that Extreme just tore the place apart. So good on Extreme. I really hope if any of you people out there that listen to the show were in the Nashville area for that show and you attended, I hope you wore your apologies to Gary shirt. I really do, because that would make me so happy. Unfortunately, I couldn't do it. But but I'm not losing hope yet. I think there's still hope that he could be made aware of the apologies to Gary shirts and want to get to the bottom of it. But yes, the plan is we are going to go see The Best of All Worlds.
I think the last tweet I saw was either from Gary or the Extreme account said, see you on the road soon. So maybe they're going to add some more legs to this current tour they're on. You know, they still got they fall should. 2024 and they got 2025. I'm still holding out hope somehow for a Canadian tour, which usually means
might.
They'll do a North American tour, which usually means Vancouver and Toronto and nowhere near where I live. But, I would certainly go and wear my Gary shirt. Apologies to Gary shirt. If they ever come anywhere near Saskatchewan, I'm going to drag Kevin Brown with me. But I brought up the Best of All Worlds tour because Sammy posted one of those, on the interweb. All the kids today, they do like those reels, I think they're called, on like the InstaFace or the FaceGram or something.
They're called TikToks, but Instagram turned them into reels. But it's TikTok. Okay. That's what it is.
Well, Sammy Hagar did one of those things, and he was kind of panning around a whole bunch of papers, and it was like rough set lists for the Best of All Worlds tour. So I actually took a screenshot of one. It's the Best of All Worlds rough set list, and I thought I'd run down the set list for you here. This is kind of what they're thinking, at least as of today, for a set list. So I wanted to get your opinions on it here. Okay, so we start off with Good Enough, and then head right into Pound Cake, Panama, and One Way to Rock. That's the first four tracks. What are you thinking? Pretty good start to a show, I'd say.
That's a hell of a start.
Absolutely.
And then it's Good Enough.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, songs 5 through 9, we have a Top of the World and then Run Around. So a nice little 4 Unlawful 1-2 punch. And then 5150, you got to do 5150. Then Ain't Talk About Love and then Heavy Metal. So we're getting one Dave track in the first four, one Dave track in the second five, and then Heavy Metal attacked on there too. So
hell yes. And if you know, then you know, because my introduction to that song was from the movie. So it's got a soft place in my heart, both the movie and the song. That is great. I would be really upset if he didn't bust out that song for this tour. So it's good to know. At least some people got to hear it. I don't know if this particular set, maybe some of the songs are interchangeable. I don't know. I don't know if he's going to do that when he comes around my neck of the woods, but here's hoping.
I'm guaranteeing there's going to be some swing songs in there. So hopefully Heavy Metal makes the cut for you. The next four, we have Mass Tequila, Finish What You Started, Your Love Is Driving Me Crazy, and Best of Both Worlds.
Hell yeah.
Looking good so far. Then we got Satch Time.
That's a really good set so far. Yeah.
Yeah. And then right into Satch Time, which it even says on the set list, Satch Time. And then we have a Satch Boogie and Summer Song, our songs 14 and 15.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get into Eagles Fly, which I'm assuming is acoustic. He also doesn't have this in the main set list, but he has Dreams kind of written off in the margin, and Dreams he had acoustic as well. So maybe Eagles Fly and Dreams he'll be swapping out. And doing Dreams acoustically might, you know, help him vocally, so he doesn't have to try and hit those high highs in that song, right? He could just kind of take it down and just play it on an acoustic guitar. I bet you it'd work quite well.
Maybe that's why. Or maybe they just... Dreams is obviously very keys heavy with the keyboards, and since you know he's not playing with a keyboardist, especially not the one that made that song sound the way it does, it probably makes a lot more sense to bring it acoustically. And I agree with you, that's also a way for him to kind of bring the vocals down just a little bit for Sammy, because look, Sammy can still rock as hard as the best of them even in his 70s, but he's still human and he's still in his 70s. So some of those really high range songs are not going to translate very well, especially depending on what leg of the tour they're on. I think doing it acoustically is, it makes a lot of sense. That's a really cool idea,
man. If they swap out every night though, I want to hear them both. So I'm hoping he doesn't swap them out, because I'd be mad if I missed Eagles Fly and mad if I missed Dreams. But from there, we go into Right Now. And then Love Walks In, Why Can't This Be Love, and I Can't Drive 55 closes out the main set.
I did see a picture of this set list. I believe it's probably the same picture that you're reading off of. I saw it. And my biggest comment about this is one of the comments is like, this is a hell of a set, but this is a long set.
21 songs in the main set.
Yeah. And, you know, these guys aren't, you know, young men anymore, especially Sammy. So it's really, it's impressive. That was the word that came to mind when I saw that, was that this is an impressive set, considering what the songs are, what is, how they are arranged, some of them in particular, and just how many and just how long this set is going to be. So this is going to be a long show for those of you who haven't seen it yet. And I'm here for it. I really hope everyone, all the guys involved, have the keep the stamina, keep it up as far as the touring goes. I'm excited to see it.
And we still have the encore here. So coming into the encore.
Oh, didn't even mention the encore.
Yeah, the encore is coming up. So it looks like we're getting kind of a medley of Space Station Number 5, Oh Yeah, and Jump. And then we're going to finish off with Father Time, and When It's Love is going to close the set. And then Up for Breakfast, I'm sure, will be the secret 27th song of the set list. But that's kind of what he had on the ref set list. And then when you kind of look at, he had another one here. We had songs that didn't make that rough set list. Stuff like, what do we have here? Your Love Is Driving Me Crazy. There was Only One Way to Rock Candy, Three Lock Box, Bad Motor Scooter. Which is the Montrose song. He is kind of fooling with a few. The one thing, if you're a real David Lee Roth fan, not a ton of Dave songs, only three Dave songs in the rough set list. So I think myself, and I'm sure a few people, were hoping that maybe Mikey would take over for like a four or five song section and do Running With the Devil and Ain't Talking About Love and maybe Somebody Get Me a Doctor, which he's been doing live and absolutely fucking crushing it. I was kind of hoping for that. That's not on this set list. So Sammy, I'm sure you're listening, because of course you should be. Give Mikey the mic for about five songs. Let him do like five classic era, original six albums set list for us.
There's also the possibility that Mikey doesn't want to. Maybe everyone is just really sour on Dave right now, which wouldn't be a huge shock, considering what's been going on lately. So it could be a lot of that, or it just could be something of, if we're going to do the Dave era songs, which one would we prefer to do? And then, you know, putting Jump on the list is kind of the biggest shocker for me.
Well, and again, it was part of that medley, right? So maybe that's a way to get around it. Like, if we put it at the end of a medley, I only have to do, like, you know, maybe the bridge and the chorus.
Yeah, that's a good point. And maybe Mikey does those. Maybe that's his moment to shine there. Or they pull a fast one and Mikey ends up singing Ain't Talking About Love with Sammy doing some harmonies with him.
That'd be great.
I love Sammy's rendition that I've heard him do of Ain't Talking About Love. I love it. But if Mikey took the reins on it vocally, I would not be upset about it. I would really like to hear what Mikey sounds like, just himself, just, you know, just going for it. But as we say, there's a good chance a lot of these songs are going to be, you know, interchangeable depending on where they're at in the tour. I'm willing to bet you they don't even remotely play Up for Breakfast at all.
No.
So worry not, Corey, and worry not all of you out there who just love to bring up that one when talking about Sammy's songs. I don't think we're going to hear it.
No, I don't think so either, but I'm going to the Toronto show. I'm going to meet up with the Bogus Otis boys there. I'm looking forward to it, and if that's the set, yeah, I'm going to be very, very happy. Of course, I'm always going to hope that, you know, that the show was 6 hours long and they did 40, 50 songs, but obviously,
of course.
Maybe just for Toronto, guys, just, you know, break out a double extra set. Do 40, 50 songs. When I saw Paul McCartney, he did like 38 songs. The guy wouldn't get off the stage. Let's have one of those shows.
I don't think he would be legally allowed to get off the stage unless he does a minimum of 30 songs, considering he's Paul McCartney considering, you know, his history.
Yeah, and 25 have to be from the Beatles, no solo cuts, and two can be from Wings.
Two can be, yeah. No, not a chance. He's doing a half. He's doing half Beatles, half Wings.
You know, I bet you it was half Beatles, half Wings when I saw him, but that's okay. I didn't mind Wings either. You know, he did Maybe I'm Amazed, which is a really great Wings cut. All right. Should we very quickly go to the Van Halen News Desk?
Sure thing.
All right. Well, we got some great articles on here. As always, head over to www.vhnd.com to get all your Van Halen news, including a look inside Van Halen of Visual Biography. Our good friend Eric Senich did an interview with a few of the authors here. You can read about that on the Van Halen News Desk. We have Joe Bonamassa on Edward Van Halen, how he achieved the brown sound. You can check out that interview there. Wolfgang Van Halen already planning the third Mammoth record. Not a real surprise there. Very early stages, though, on that one. So, and he's going to be on the road pretty much from now until December, I think. So he's not going to have a lot of time to work on it until probably next year. So don't get your hopes up. Oh, Tom in the chat, Junior's Farm. Yes, he played that in Saskatoon. And I know Kevin knows that because he was at that show. Not with me. I think he was with his boyfriend, Randy Woods. But he says Wings are a fucking killer band. There you go. Let's go back to Five Kids, One Dream, Seeing Van Halen Live. There's another one of those articles you can catch on here where they're just talking to fans and their recollections of seeing the mighty Van Halen back in their glory days. When Gene Simmons asked Ace Frehley to play Eddie Van Halen solo, quote, he was furious, end quote. No shit. But if for anyone who knows the stories behind Gene Simmons and Eddie and Alex and, you know, producing their demo and allegedly wanting Eddie and Alex to join them in Kiss, there's a little bit more feel to that fire you can check out there. Oh, of course, March 16th was Wolfgang Van Halen's birthday. So, of course, from all of us here at on the Podcastle Rock, a very happy belated birthday to the one and only Wolfgang Van Halen. And Dave Lee Roth gets up for a new cover of Jump. There's a really cool kind of a...
No.
No, he doesn't do it. No, it's a very laid-back
okay, good.
cover of Jump that he doesn't perform. It's actually a very good cover of Jump. He's just in the video doing David things. But Alex Melton recorded an acoustic alt-pop indie rock cover of Van Halen's number one hit single from 1984. So Roth showed his approval by uploading a video featuring that version of the song. And it's archival footage of Dave Lee Roth and his late friend Russ checking out the sights of New York. So if you want to watch that video, there it is right there on the Van Halen news desk.
All right. Well, that is certainly something. And I guarantee you, Dave gave his seal of approval just because he's in it.
Well, he gave a seal of approval, then put video of himself over top of it, which is how Dave shows. Well,
that's why. Yeah, that was the caveat. It's just like, yeah, you can do it, but here you go. I'm going to put myself like in the video for it. Like, all right, if you have to.
Van Mayer, says Josh. You're not wrong.
No, not wrong.
All right. So, you know, it's been a couple of weeks since we've done one of these because we did the big live show, which is fantastic. Yes. If everyone check that out. Still about an hour too long for my liking. Or we're still kind of tweaking the format, how we can get that down to about an hour 30 instead of 2:30. We did cut an hour out of it, though. Guys who are still busting my balls, it's too long. I'm like, we shaved an entire hour out of this one. So still working on it. Maybe we'll make our patrons kind of apply to be on the next show. Why do you think you should be on the fuck show? Because that's the next live show we got coming up. Write a thousand word dissertation.
Tell us in 30 seconds or less. Like if you can do that, then we'll have something for you.
Exactly. Because of that, we haven't been on a call in a while, and we haven't talked about episode 124 yet. And House of Pain, Mark, why don't you tell us how that went?
That's right. House of Pain was the last show we did that wasn't the live show, and that was the song that finally closed the chapter in our journey with 1984. Although we are not completely done with it because we still have to rank 1984, so we will be on that soon. But House of Pain, this was an often requested, often manifested track from the Van Halen catalog from a lot of people over time. And so no shocker whatsoever, maybe just a tad shocker because I assumed it was going to be a little bit higher, but at 91.1% What Dreams Are Made Of versus an 8.9% The Dream Is Over. Because it's from 1984 and because everyone seems to be, you know, just pro Roth era songs anyway, I always just assume his songs at the minimum are going to be like 93%. This one was 91, which is still a good score, respectable score. But I am surprised it didn't get a little higher. I'm actually more surprised that out of the votes, we had so many down votes. So many Dream Is Over. Honestly, I mean, 8.9% Dream Is Over votes. That doesn't seem like a lot, but it's enough. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's enough to destroy the 95% bracket. Are you surprised by this result?
A little bit, and we're gonna do. We have to do a revote on some of these because if you take a look at where it ranks all time here on the show, it's ranked 24th overall. ahead of Panama. Wow. So ahead of Panama from the same record, ahead of Girl Gone Bad, ahead of Jump, which may have the overplay factor in there. But House of Pain, it kind of nestles it right underneath Where Have All the Good Times Gone, which I don't know. We were really, really positive on House of Pain. I would have ranked this much higher than songs like Where Have All the Good Times Gone or even Top Jimmy. From this record, to me, House of Pain is a top five cut from 1984. Not that there's anything wrong with Top Jimmy, but that was 91.9%. This is 91.1%. But still, of course, well ahead of all the Sammy cuts, too. But yeah, 24th for House of Pain seems too low. To me, you know, this is top 20 easy, maybe even top 15.
Considering how much, as I said, this was manifested and how keen people were for us to spin this one. Yeah, it does seem a bit odd. But, what do you say we see what our people are saying about it?
Sure.
I'm going to head on over. Under the poll on the Twitters, or the whatever name for the app you want to call it, our buddy Sean McGinnity from Sean Geek and Fast Rip Podcast, he said, all day long and every day, what dreams are made of. This was dangerous, Van Halen. As a kid, I had no idea what the heck this song was about, but I was intrigued, and I kept listening over and over again, trying to figure it out. This song is, okay, I'll spoil it, favorite track on 1984. So that's where Sean feels about it. He is all about some House of Pain. I think Sean himself is one among many that have manifested this one quite a bit, if I'm not mistaken. So there you go. That's how he feels about it. Heath McCoy out there. There's a wild Heath McCoy running about, and he says, although this song goes back to the first demo, I always found it tragically poetic that this was the last song of the classic lineup. It's about a relationship gone dark, tones of violence even. But isn't that the perfect fitting for the state of the band with the David Lee Roth divorce imminent? What Dreams Are Made Of course, that crunchy riffage, the brothers in lockstep, and dark, prophetic, kinky, violent lyrics from Roth. Amazing. He does bring up a good point. It does kind of seem fitting that's the last track of the classic lineup, and considering the content of it. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about that when we covered the song. I was too engrossed with how it was structured and how we were feeling during our positive listen. So yeah, but good points from Heath, man. That definitely gives you a new perspective when listening to this song now. That's cool.
Absolutely. And if you, you know, it used to be the last song of the classic era, including David Lee Roth. Of course, they came back for a different kind of truth. So the final song is Beats Working. Like, House of Pain beats Working. Holy cow. For final Dave tracks.
Oh, yeah.
I think House of Pain kicks it in the ass. Jeff Brewer says, better than Top Jimmy, but no way on Panama or Girl Gone Bad. So he thinks Panama, which is a better song. I agree with that. Girl Gone Bad, maybe. But we both agree Top Jimmy should have been below House of Pain.
Yeah. No, we liked Top Jimmy, but yeah, I'm still kind of baffled how it was so high. But then again, I'm still baffled that our number one song still right now is Little Guitars.
Little Guitars,
but,
how?
I mean, it's a good song. It's a good song, but I just, wow, you guys love it. But anywho, Rava Flav says, it's official. This is a winner. The mix is a little off, but the performance by all four is smoking hot. The intro, the bridge, and Ed's solo, along with Al going Carl Palmer throughout all of it. Some of Dave's best vocals and lyrics, too. Great way to end 1984. I think, if I remember correctly, I haven't gone back and listened to it. But yeah, I think we talked pretty positive about Dave's lyrics on House of Pain.
Oh yeah.
Which, you know me, like sometimes I don't let you guys get away with if you're gonna talk smack about Sammy's lyrics, which admittedly some of them, a lot of them, not great, but you know, it is what it is. But I was like, I don't let you get away with when Dave comes up with some really dumb lyrics and y'all think like, yeah, but the song's cool, so whatever. Like, no. Let's call a spade a spade. However, House of Pain does not fit that criteria. It was thumbs up all around from what I recall. So there you go. Jeff Brewer says, actually, I'm going to wait on Jeff. I'm going to wait on Jeff, and then I'm going to wait on Scott as well. And then there you go. Those are the tweets. We had a lot more tweets, but you guys, if you want it guaranteed read on the show, you know what you got to do? You got to go join our Patreon. That's right. Join a tier. Find a tier that works for you. Join the Patreon, and then you get your tweets when we do a show guaranteed read on the air also. And the big seller is you get a link to the Discord where the conversations are constantly happening, and you get to make little manifestos about how you feel about each song, and I will read them guaranteed on the air, such as, just going to go over here, and I believe, yes, thank you, Scott Monroe, for telling me where to start. It's very helpful. I just shout out to Scott Monroe. Yes. You do this every week, and I appreciate it. It helps me so much. So thank you for doing that. But we're going to start with our buddy Chad, who says House of Pain, not just a great ending song to a great album, but a great last song that ends the era. What a great bookmark of an era. Running with the Devil at the beginning and House of Pain at the end. Yeah, when you think about it like that, that's crazy. Perfect timing for a rework of a demo slash club song. So long, David Lee Roth. Not if you were the last immigrant grocer on earth, honey. Hello, baby. I had to, I assume that's how you wanted me to read that, Chad. So, I also, I assume he voted yes on this one. He didn't actually say, but I assume so. The aforementioned Scott Monroe says, House of Pain is an absolute masterclass in Van Halen jamming. So good it hurts. In my book, it's all about the brothers here. David Lee Roth is extraneous with forgettable lyrics and just there for a little flair and a farewell howl for good measure. This song has everything I want in a Van Halen banger. A killer riff that's an earworm, an incredible Eddie Van Halen solo, underappreciated in the catalog, I'd say, and a cool-as-hell outro with everyone at the height of their powers. Yes, because it's reworked from the early demo days, it totally exudes the fierce pop metal urgency of Van Halen 1 and 2. A perfect closer to 1984, which has taken listeners on a ride through synth, soundscapes, and more, before reminding us that they are Van fucking Halen. Hashtag what dreams are made of. The best to do it. Scott Monroe always has a way with words. He's a wordsmith, that Monroe. Let's see here. Let's see. And Sean had more to say. He wasn't done. Sean McGinnity says, my faves on 1984 constantly flip, but this week, this is my number one. I love the danger in this song. There is something going on with the manic playing, the weird time signatures. If the band started the album heavy on the synths, they sure ended strong on the brothers with the manic abandon, yet tight as fuck. This is the song that segued many of us to seek out the rest of the catalog when we were first introduced. It also showed that Alex and Eddie were the heart of Van Halen, the foundation to the entire sound of Van Halen. Alex both scared me with his drums and enticed to start playing with this song like some pusher. After hearing this, there was no way I wasn't going to play drums and push myself to get better. No more playing drums safe after hearing this one. I mean, you can't play drums safe if you're going to start rocking out Van Halen and whatnot. So I hear you. I understand. Let's see. Chaz Mataz, old buddy Chaz Charles, he says, House of Pain is Van Halen at its best. Roth's lyrics are as raunchy as the music, making for a metal homage to pure kink. Gonna fix it so that you never leave this House of Pain. The music has the raw power of the upstart, being a fixture since the club days, but it took them as long to get the lyrics right and nail it on record. One of the best of their deep tracks, faux show. Hashtag what dreams are made of. He didn't actually put the hashtag, but I'll assume he meant it. And then Jeff Brewer says, ditto to everything everyone said good about House of Pain.
So attaboy, Jeff.
Keeping it. Yeah, way to go, Jeff. Good job. he had some other commentary, but he's mainly just adding on to what everybody else has said. He's very keen on House of Pain. So thank you all. Like I said, you guys, if you want to have your tweet, your manifesto, whatever you want, guaranteed right on the show, head over to our Patreon and the podcast will rock. Join it, get on a tier, join the conversation. You'll get that Discord link and you'll be having fun like the rest of us. It's a good time.
Mime is money. Let's go. Come on, move it.
Are you rushing me? Okay. Well, we're just going to get over there and do our thing. Not our favorite thing, our second favorite thing. Say it with me and take a shot. Manifestations. I'm all antsy now because Corey's rushing me.
I just downloaded some new Spinal Tap clips to my Roadcaster. So
I'm trying to find... Christy still hasn't seen it. I'm trying to find the perfect time to show her that film because she very much needs to.
The perfect time is any time. Like, do it immediately after we're done recording.
Say that when you're living with an ADHD person.
I hear you, but like, then she'll,
I don't know, maybe you are.
She'll understand what this quote is.
Can't they print that? Where they print that?
That's not real, is it?
You can't print that.
That was after the review of Shark Sandwich, which was just a two-word review, which just said shit sandwich.
Shit sandwich. Love it. Oh, good stuff. Go watch Spinal Tap, kids. There's a sequel coming. So, speaking of manifestations, we only have so many on the wheel, so I wonder what people are dying to hear. We go on over to the Discord and look at the manifestations of our peeps. Let's see here. Earlier in the week, actually last week, but we'll go ahead and say it here. Sean McGinnity said, man, I would be happy with Little Dreamer or Big Bad Bill. He's aching for Big Bad Bill. That has been a constant. Let's see here. Our friend Josh says Josephina because he's trying to get us to rip the Band-Aid right off of that. That's the last track of that particular album. So Kevin Brown, our buddy, says still manifesting Aftershock. Of course he is. And that's fine. We'll see. Jeff Brewer wants Hang 'Em High. He's going for Hang 'Em High. And then Tom Armbruster wants Big Bad Bill. I'm a chaos agent tonight, is what he said. So I don't know what he's saying in the chat right now, if he's in there, but he's a chaos agent. So we're in for a treat, I guess, if we spin Big Bad Bill. Chaz says he wants Joseph fucking Fina for Christ. Oh. I see what he did there.
He chazified it.
He chazified it. It's nonsense. Just like his chazitar is nonsense. And then, of course, Scott Monroe with Aftershock. So while I try to get these hiccups away, so I'm not hiccuping into the mic because that would be rude. Corey, tell me what you want to manifest for tonight.
I tell you what, I'm thinking about way, way back when Van Halen played a little blues jazz festival.
And we were playing a festival, jazz blues festival. Where was that?
Blues jazz, really.
Blues jazz festival.
It was in the Isle of Lucy.
The Isle of Lucy, that's right. Yeah, they played that blues jazz festival. And I'm thinking, at first I was thinking Amsterdam might be good, but I don't know if your lady's there tonight. So we have three balance tracks. I'm going to join my Ultimate Catalog Clash partner in crime. I'm going to try and manifest Aftershock here tonight.
Good call. If we can't listen to one particular track from Balance, then we might as well listen to the other one. So I too am going Aftershock because you get a little bit of balance. Look, it's Sammy season, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of the Van Halen flair. I mean, you could also argue it's Wolfie season as well, but right now it's Sammy season. So let's have a little bit more Sammy while we have him still on the wheel. Yep, I'm going Aftershock. You're going Aftershock. So that's a couple of votes for Aftershock. So we'll see if we're gonna call our shot, Corey. If you're ready. What do you say we prime this thing? How many people we got in the chat?
Well, right now? We got 9 in the chat right now, plus ourselves. Nine. That's 11, so I'll shuffle this 11 times.
11 times.
9, 10, 11.
The wheel does not like an odd number prime, but that is just the way it goes. Sometimes.
These go to 11.
Well, fortunately, they go to 11. So, if you're ready to go, let's do this fucking thing.
Always.
Here we go!
We're going to finish off. Oh, actually, we're not finishing up. We had 2 left. A little Hang 'Em High off a Diver Down. All right. Was that Tom that called his shot? Who called for
Hang 'Em
High?
No, Tom wanted Big Bad Bill. Oh. So Hang 'Em High was Jeff Brewer.
Jeff Brewer. I believe that might be his second. Jeff. I'm not sure, but he joins the Manifest Club. That's myself there. Not bad at all. Ah,
there it is. Yeah. Yeah, we're going back to everyone's favorite album, Tyfer Town. And yes, I am being facetious because for whatever reason, well, maybe not. Actually, through the course of this show and this journey, I know at least for me, I'm quite fond of Tyfer Town, and I'm thinking we may have changed some minds.
I hope.
As we've gone through it, because I know a lot of people in the early stages of the show in the beginning were not down on us spinning anything from Tyfer Town because they called it the quote the covers album or just like the album that I guess is just lacking. But as I said, more and more every time we spun a track, the more I was really into Tyfer Town, and I really didn't understand why people were so anti Tyfer Town. So would you agree with that assessment, though, that do you think we've changed some minds? Do you think we've added a different perspective to the album for people that were not so hot on it?
I hope so. And I'm kind of looking at my friend Kevin Brown, who I'm hoping is still in the chat, and he can kind of talk to at this point a little bit. But he was a guy who I think was really down on Tyfer Town originally, but we've covered a lot of these tracks now. We only have one left on the wheel from Tyfer Town, and I'm hoping that, you know, he's coming around on it. Obviously, our current champion is from this record, Little Guitars. Yeah. I'm just kind of take a look at how the rest of the record is doing in our polls here real quick.
I mean, that right alone speaks wonders that the majority of people were not crazy about us doing anything from this album, and yet our champion comes from this album.
That's right. So we have Where Have All the Good Times Gone was 91%, Secrets 85, Pretty Woman was 79, Dancing in the Streets is the low man right now, 62. Then we have Little Guitars at 98, Full Bug at 86, and Happy Trails at 75. So you know, I'm hoping maybe, you know, that's one I always used to, that's by far my least favorite, especially out of the David Lee Roth era. But I'm coming around on it. So even if no listeners are, it's, you know, I'm coming around on this one. We've had some big, and, you know, Hang 'Em High, I don't want to tip my hand, but, you know, I'm a fan of Pretty Women. I know you didn't like it so much. Full Bug is a really cool song. Secrets is a good song. Where Have All the Good Times Gone, I thought was great. I thought you hated Pretty Woman.
Who am I thinking of? Pretty Woman.
Oh.
Kevin Brown.
Kevin Brown, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, Kevin Brown, because it's he likes the original better, I think. He likes the Orbison version. I'm like, no, I've always loved, in my head, the Orbison version doesn't exist. Like, it's Van Halen's version.
Right. Kevin in the chat says, still think the covers stink other than Good Times, but Little Guitars is top five for me now. So he's one of those people that is really elevating Little Guitars. Hey, there's nothing wrong with Little Guitars. Yeah. Top five Van Halen, though, for me, that's a stretch. But for Kev, good for you. Remember, he likes, you know, shitty bands, too. Like, he likes good music, and he likes some really off stuff, too. He's like, oh, yeah, we got to cover, like, fucking Men at Work. And, like, the Down Under guys, they have a discography.
What's your beef with Men at Work?
They have, like, one song, I know. Oh, they have Who Can It Be Now and Land Down Under. Is there more to them than that? Like,
well, considering Men at Work is essentially just Colin Hay, it's his band, and then you hear him go solo, and he's got, like, just an extensive catalog. I would, if you're not so hot on Men at Work, I would invite you to check out more of just Colin Hay's work. Okay. And yes, you will get his solo renditions of some Men at Work songs, but also just the stuff that he's done by himself. Yeah, man, it's Overkill tugs at my heartstrings ever since, like, all the time. The song Overkill. So give it another try, Corey. I encourage you.
I will do it just for you. Okay. Kevin says, go get a mark. Come on. We're all friends here. No attack. Let's get back to
I like Colin's solo stuff better than the Men at Work stuff, but I don't hate Men at Work. So I just want to put that on record.
No, and Scott Haskins says Men at Work did Overkill. Did you say that was a Colin Hay solo song or did? Okay.
Well, Men at Work did it, but then Colin did a solo acoustic version of it. It was actually famously played on an episode of Scrubs that really kind of gained some new traction. So I think the solo version is way better than the Men at Work version.
Scott Haskins is going to keep bringing up my affinity for a band, Thunder, and I'm going to start talking about shit that he likes that nobody else does, because there's a ton. Debbie Gibson lover. But anyways.
Maybe you like Debbie Gibson?
I liked her.
What's going on, Gory?
I liked her Playboy pictorial, musically. It's pretty generic in vanilla. I mean,
I say that like I'm the greatest Debbie Gibson fan. I'm like, I'm not. I'm just busting your shit.
I think it's fucking stock. Which part of that is unclear to you?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah. Now, if you had said Debbie Harry, we'd have had a problem. But
We would have. I would never do that to legendary Debbie Harry. Why don't we talk about Hang 'Em High, though? This is the second track. Sure. Off of Diver Down. It came from the 1977 demo where it was called Last Night, but they completely reworked the lyrics, and it's a tongue-in-cheek kind of jab at Clint Eastwood.
Oh. Well, I mean, that's always fun to take jabs at Clint Eastwood.
Why not, eh?
Yeah, why not?
Should we actually play the damn thing?
Well, we should. We should absolutely do that.
Why not? Let's go all the way back to Diver Down. This is the second track off that record. This little ditty called Hang 'Em High.
Right off the bat. Okay, that shit's great. I can't remember the last time I heard Hang 'Em High, but this is one of my kind of sleeper favorites intros of how Van Halen opens up a song. Cause man, when they really want to, they can just kick you in the balls with it. This one's one of those kick you in the balls like intros. I love that opening riff. Just had to point that out.
Well, and especially when you look at the track listing for Diver Down, you have Where Have All the Good Times Gone? The Kings cover, and then we kick it, and this is the first like Van Halen original, a la A Different Kind of Truth, reworked from the 1977 material, so they kind of reused older stuff. But yeah, like you said, it's a direct kick to the nuts and pretty much everything you love about Van Halen, isn't it?
Oh yeah, very much so.
Kevin in the chat says there's a great vid of a guy breaking down that intro. He's actually swinging that beat when you slow it down. It's insane technique, which we expect nothing less. Right at this point.
I was just like, consider the source.
Yeah.
Not shocked.
Jeff says, a jab at Clint or an homage? I always thought it was kind of a, you know, we'll get into it when we talk lyrically about the song.
Yeah.
Let's get back to her. So what do you think of Dave's delivery there? He's not really singing it. It's kind of a spoken word section. And again, kind of following that Western motif, somewhere he lost it in a turn. Now trouble seems to fit him like a glove. First come, first serve. He's serving it back. He travels light without a pack, without love.
Cool lyrics. As far as his performance and delivery, I'll say this by telling you what I was thinking. What I was thinking was if the bass was a little bit more... let's say, I don't want to say raunchy, but like if the bass were kicked up and it was a little more like raw sounding, this would be a tremendous Motorhead song.
Okay.
I get a lot of Motorhead vibes from this, and it's apropos of nothing. It just sounds like Motorhead to me. So when I hear Dave doing what he's doing, it makes me just kind of wish. It makes me wish it was Lemmy, to be honest with you. Like, you hear what Dave's doing now. Imagine Lemmy doing this, and that's a fantastic start to a great Motorhead song, I think. But to fully answer your question, I don't think it's Dave's most spectacular vocal performance thus far. It's an interesting choice, but again, I'm not 100% mad at it, because it does give me this, it's a different kind of vibe than your typical Van Halen. You know, it's got a little bit more of that. There's some punk flair to it. There's some of that, you know, like I said, to me, it kind of sounds like a Motorhead song a little bit. So if you listen to what Motorhead typically does with their song structures and how Lemmy presents his vocal delivery, I could kind of give Dave somewhat of a pass. I might take that back as the song goes on, or I might not, but we'll see. But so far, I'm like, it's not great, but I'm not angry about it. How about you?
Well, I've heard this song a lot, and I've never ever thought Motorhead, but now all I can see is Lemmy with the big cowboy hat and the mic, you know, tilted down, wailing away on the bass, singing that and sounding so fucking cool. We actually, on the latest edition of the Ultimate Catalog Clash, we're wrapping up Metallica, 90s Metallica, and we're talking about Garage Inc. and S&M. And the topic of Lemmy came up and just how fucking legendary he is. And we're talking about it on Twitter today, actually, about how Lemmy can pretty much do it all, you know, country music, fucking anything. Lemmy's going to make it sound cooler, right? And I'm with you in that. And, you know, Dave is just kind of, you know, I get what he's kind of going for. He's going to have his moments in this song. And there's one coming up here, I think, that is pretty damn good. But yeah, if Lemmy's doing this, it's 100 times better.
Oh yeah, it just I don't know why it just this the way the song is structured and just sounds it gave me a Motorhead feel, so it's hard to get that out of my brain.
Oh, I definitely hear it now that you brought it up. That totally makes sense. All right, let's keep going. All right, so there we had the bass kind of doing something like Mikey, like he was rocking it, and guitars. I mean, what can you say at this point? We're 120 some shows in. Eddie Van Halen is the fucking greatest guitar player of all time, and he's showing it.
He really is. And I will say, having said what I've said about like how the song sounds and what I think Dave's doing, at the same time, I don't know what else he could be doing different here that would fit. That's why I'm not mad at what he's doing vocally, because it's like, well, what else is he going to be doing in this particular song? Because he could go into his kind of other Roth-isms that he's known for, but I don't know that it would translate very well with how this particular song is structured and the way the music is being performed. So I'm like, that's why I say I'm not mad at what he's doing. Like it's interesting and different and kind of odd, but I'm not mad at it. I will say I love that elongated high, like on "And Hang 'Em High," and he's just like holding out that note on high. It's really good. That's really good stuff.
That whole second half of the verse I thought was great, and then onto the "Hang 'Em High" sounds fantastic. I found a quote here from David Lee Roth about the lyrics of this song, and he says, quote, "It's like all those westerns where there's some kind of dissonant sound in the background, like they'll have one harmonica that hits only one note, and that's when you know the hero's coming to town or something terrible is going to happen. And what happens is Edward will come up with a song or a riff, and then immediately I'll hear it, and I'll know right away what the scenario is." So,
I mean, I get that. I completely get that. He's not wrong either about the old Western little tropes and in music. That's funny, hilarious. But yeah, no, I totally get what he means when he says like Eddie will come in with a song or he'll come in with a particular sound, and I'll know exactly where it needs to go. Yeah, I mean you. Eddie was inspiring, you know, Eddie was inspiring Dave. He was probably inspiring everybody, because how could you not? He inspires people to this day, and he's sadly no longer with us. So yeah, Eddie inspiring you to come up with something awesome musically because of what he's already come up with. Yeah, not a shock.
It's cool. You heard this music and thought Motorhead. David Lee Roth heard this lyric and thought Spaghetti Western.
Spaghetti Western, which is cool. Clint Eastwood. Yeah. Hey, and that is why music is subjective.
That's right. Well, I think we didn't really talk about. I think these lyrics are really, really good. Are you a fan of Westerns? I am. I watched all the Spaghetti Westerns back in the day, but even newer Westerns like 310 to Yuba, I thought was a great one from not that long ago. The Coen Brothers' True Grit, I thought was really good. You like Westerns?
I didn't. I liked only a few select ones, like Unforgiven was pretty classic, and Tombstone I think is still for all its cheesiness and for all the behind the scenes drama, Tombstone is still great. I'm with you though, a lot of modern westerns made in the last like 20 years or so have been great. That 310 to Yuma remake is awesome. I like True Grit. There was another one with Bale called Hostiles, which was tremendously good, but it's a difficult watch because of the subject matter. But westerns are making kind of a big resurgence, and they're doing really well, and I'm surprised how much I'm a fan of so many of them, because I didn't used to be.
All right, before we get into it, Leather crosses thighs, blasting out the night, his cap hides his eyes. One eye on the road, price upon his head, one ear to the ground, he's listening to the dead. He's painting a picture. You really get a sense of where you are with his lyrics here. I'm really digging it.
I love what he wrote. I hate how he's singing it.
Okay.
Yeah, just that, for whatever reason, that phrase, him singing it, where he's just kind of like, it's almost like he's not even caring about what he's doing, like in the recording booth or what this particular section of the song. He's just kind of and like, did you just give up? Or like, I don't know. I'm not a fan of how he vocally phrased that section.
Well, see, you got to picture yourself in a spaghetti western. Maybe you're the man with no name, and you're saddling up, and you're leather across the thighs, blasting out the night, his cap hides his... You're Clint Eastwood. Maybe that's how he's trying to deliver.
They should have got Lemmy to sing on this song.
Lemmy makes everything better.
Yeah, especially, I mean, he's got the... If there was ever a voice in rock and roll for the Western, I feel like Lemmy's a top contender for that.
Yeah.
Just the way his voice sounds.
I believe his ashes are getting interned at the Rainbow Bar and Grill in L.A. Like, because he spent all his time there, like playing like the slots and whatnot. So,
I have heard many a tale. I don't know if any of them are remotely true, but Lemmy was legendary for many reasons.
Amen. Let's get into something else a little more legendary here, and let's get back to Hang 'Em High. Okay, if the song was just that, it would still be one of the best things I heard, especially on Diver Down. But I'm just going to say what everybody's thinking at this point. Michael Anthony was killing it on the bass.
Yeah, this is the part where it ceased to be a Motorhead sounding song. Like this turned into Eddie Van Halen, or actually just Van Halen at their best. Man, holy God, this section is just fire. Like, it's just nonstop fire. Yes, I'm right there with you. Like, Mike, we love Michael Anthony here on the show. We love boosting him up and talking about the awesome stuff he does. Even when it's very subtle, he's doing great stuff. This right here is not so subtle. This here is just him letting loose, which we only get to hear so often. And when he does, it's spectacular. But the thing is, I'm not sure who's the true star of this section, whether it's Eddie or it's Alex, because Alex is losing his mind back there, too. Yep. And he's just like, let's see if you guys can keep up with this. And of course, you know, Eddie's going to make that challenge, and he's going to accept it, and he's going to meet it. And so I don't know, Corey, who's the MVP of this particular section? Is it Eddie? Is it Alex? Or is it Mikey?
I think it's a three-way tie for first, because I'm listening to Mikey on the bass, like, oh, he's going up the neck. He's doing some cool stuff. They got Alex. He does like a little slip time thing. Just a little off time thing that really kind of works. And then Eddie is just fucking killing it, right? Like up and down the fretboard.
Yeah.
I found a quote from Eddie here about this solo. He says, quote, "The solo was just loose, fun craziness. I play it better every night than I did on the record, but who cares? It has feeling." Actually, that was a really old song, but yeah, maybe it becomes a really old song that they just went out there and jammed that section and just, like you said, just kind of loose, fun craziness. And, you know, if you're in like a backyard party with Van Halen back in the day and they're doing like a cover of something they played 100 times, that's how they're playing it. And that's what I really miss. And that's why I'm really hoping Greg Gronoff gets his movie deal for Van Halen Rising, so we can at least see actors try and replicate that on screen. But I wasn't around California back in the 70s, unfortunately, but that's just fucking killer. That's everything you love about Van Halen right there. Chaz plays this solo. He says, quote, "I love playing that part of the solo over and over, up and down the fretboard. I can imagine for a guitar player, that'd be a hell of a lot of fun."
The challenge, for sure. I'm not even going to try to attempt it. So, like, Godspeed to the rest of y'all. This whole thing is just get the fire extinguisher, set off the sprinklers, because it's all burning down, man. It's just fire. Fireballs nonstop.
That's right. All right, let's keep rocking. I saw that smile when the cowbell came in and then the bass kicked in. It's like, oh, yeah.
Of course. I mean, like, Alex is the only dude who can utilize the cowbell well and pull it off and be serious, you know, like people take it seriously. maybe Neil Peart, but I'm going to say Alex probably wins it on that one just because he uses it a lot. We have discussed many a song where the cowbell has been a feature in Alex's playing, and you know, it's always fun to make fun of the cowbell and everything like that, but we don't make fun of it when Alex Van Halen plays it, because like he's just it's an extra flavor to the meal of drum performance that he's giving you, and it's delicious.
I'm gonna put Chaz on the spot here, because of course he hosts Rush Rash. How many cowbells do you think Neil Peart had on his kit, Chaz? Especially on that final tour when it was like literally 200 pieces. Like it was just insane, his kit. How many cowbells do you think were on there?
There's probably a number of how many, and then there's another number of like, yeah, but how many did he actually use? Like which one did he actually play?
Yeah, did he actually ever hit that one? It might be different. Mm-hmm. Hal owns the cowbell is what Chaz says. All right, let's keep going here. Did you hear what Alex did? Just because we have the kind of the reprise of that verse there on the blasting out the night, his cap hides his head, like, or cap hides his eyes, what Alex was doing there. Like, oh, that's fucking brilliant. And because I'm coming off listening to Lars Ulrich, he doesn't do that, or he definitely doesn't do that as well as Alex Van Halen does. And it's kind of a relief. I'm sitting listening.
Yeah, I'm sure it is a relief.
So I challenged Chaz and I said, how many cowbells on Neil's kit? He says, quote, "I bet there was one."
He's probably got it. He probably had at least two cowbells, but he maybe touched one of them.
Because he went all the way around his kit, right? I'm betting there was six. Mm-hmm. And he just had them all the way around. So no matter which way he was pointing, he had a cowbell if he needed it. Guy was a genius.
Yeah, it's just like he's got all of his bases covered.
Yeah. Snares all the way around. Tom's like, just in case, if I'm facing this way. Mm-hmm. Oh, Chaz says there were five. That makes more sense if there were five. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. To his credit, though, Neil was pretty good about utilizing at least most of every piece of his kit. That
oh my
he had
God!
There,
yes.
Like every, yeah, every, it's all there for purpose. And you know, yeah, they like to be silly and have this grand display. Need I remind you of the giant white washer and dryers they would bring on the stage?
The chicken rotisserie.
Yeah, the chicken rotisserie, which had a guy in an outfit would come out there and like
marinate it,
it and marinate it. Which the first time I saw that, I didn't have context. So I was like, I showed my dad. I'm like, what the hell is Rush doing up there? And he's the one that told me. He's like, oh, this was an inside joke. And I'm like, oh, okay. But so, yeah. But Neil utilized, I would say, 98% of those pieces of his kit. So if there was five cowbells, he at least touched one of them.
I know our... We have a sports network up here. It's like the Canadian ESPN is called TSN, the sports network, real original. But we used to have on the CBC for decades, Hockey Night in Canada had its own theme song. And then CBC ditched it for a new song. So the TSN picked up the rights to the Hockey Night in Canada theme song. And they got Neil Peart to perform it one season. And I bet you he hit every damn drum. Just doing the dun 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 dun, dun like the Hockey Night in Canada theme song. Oh, it's really, really good. So yeah. Search that up on Google, Neil Peart, Hockey Night in Canada. But
will do.
All right. Let's keep going here. Oh, hang 'em high. Ooh, from Diver Down. I know Chaz correcting me in the chat. I'm not a Rush expert, nor am I an expert on really fucking anything, but he had a custom kit for the Hockey Night in Canada theme he did for TSN. So thank you, Chaz. And by all means, please go listen to Rush Rash, the absolute best Rush podcast there is out there. Mark Kamire, I wanted to ask you real quick before we get into the voting. I know Christy just got home, and she looks like she's in a good mood. Oh, she's talking to
talking about feeding the snakes. So
oh, the snakes. Good. There you go. I wanted to ask you, though,
it's like
in the second half of the song, are you still upset at David Lee Roth's vocal performance? Or he kind of cranked it up a notch back on the leather across his thigh and then into the last chorus.
It's only the leather across his thigh bit, you know, like that little section right there is just the way it's just almost like spoken word, but like lazy. And I get it. You're probably correct in that he did that with purpose because of the content of the lyrics, you know, and like what that's supposed to set the scene, if you will. And that's all well and good, but I don't know, just because the music sounds the way it does and then you're not matching the energy vocally, just kind of like I really wish you would have chosen a different path on this particular section, but everything else works for me. Everything else works. So there's just that little bit. So but Corey, I have to ask you something. I have to ask you the most important question.
Oh boy.
Is Hang 'Em High, though? It's kind of a divisive album for a lot of people, Diver Down. And you and I, we have grown to really appreciate it, I think, a little more than we did originally during this journey. But I ask you this: is Hang 'Em High what dreams are made of, or is the dream over?
This is an easy one for me, and it may be my favorite song from Diver Down. It's certainly better than all the covers. I haven't listened to Little Guitars in a while. I don't want to say I like it better than that one, but there's really nothing to nitpick on this track. I love everything about it. I thought the lyrics were really cool. I like how Dave performed it, especially on the Hang 'Em High on that big extended note. I thought it was great. And that solo section, like that is by far the best from this record. So if it's not one on my rankings of Diver Down, it's like 1A or 1B. Like, it's very, very close. I love Hang 'Em High. Really no picks to nit on this one. This one's fucking fantastic. Mark Meyer, though, you weren't really a fan of DLR on this one. I know you liked the solo section, but is that going to be enough to save this one for you? Is this what dreams are made of, or is the dream tragically over?
I can forgive if one section isn't up to par, but the rest of the song is going above and beyond. And that's what I think Hang 'Em High does. I think Hang 'Em High goes above and beyond what you would have expected from Van Halen on this particular album. People call it the covers album because there's quite a few covers. So like, okay, but here's an original one for you, by the way. And this one just rips. It just absolutely rips. Does it have a Motorhead feel to me? Yes, it does. That's not a bad thing. And I don't, when I say all that, I'm not implying that Van Halen is channeling Motorhead directly per se. I'm not even suggesting that they're ripping them off or anything like that. So do not get my words twisted. I am simply saying I hear this song and it invokes a feeling of Motorhead sound in my ear. That, of course, as we pointed out, is completely wiped away when the solo section comes up, because that doesn't sound like Motorhead. That sounds like Van Halen. And it's very much Van Halen with the brothers in full swing, just absolutely just dominating, not to be outdone. Mikey, Michael Anthony, we love, we adore him. He is kind of the unsung hero for a lot of Van Halen tracks, even when he's not doing what appears to be a lot, but he's doing quite a bit. And on this song, he is doing so much because everybody's doing so much. The only person who's not doing so much is David Lee Roth, ironically. However, overall, he still is doing service to the song. You know, one section aside, he is serving the song. He's not serving himself in this song, which, as we all know, David Lee Roth loves to serve himself. Doesn't matter what track it is. He didn't even have to be doing anything Van Halen related. He just loves serving himself. However, this song doesn't feel like a self-service. It feels like we're here to rock. We're here to jam. It sounds like a jam. And if you tell me this is a song that they brought back from their backyard, their club days, I believe it, because this thing just is full of energy. It sounds like if you had never heard Van Halen before and this is the song you're introduced to, then this sounds like a song by a band that is hungry and is looking to prove something. And what they're proving is, hey, we are some of the best damn dudes to do it. And if you want to argue, take a listen to this. So that's how I feel about Hang 'Em High. It's a top-notch track in the Van Halen catalog. Is it my favorite from this album? No, but it is a wonderful track, especially an original track from the quote-unquote covers album, which I'm not going to call it that. It's Diver Down. Give Diver Down a little bit more love than you guys gave it, because it's a damn good record.
Tom is pointing out the lyric "Laughing up his scheme, play splat and bone alert." We're getting some conflicting lyrics from what we showed on the screen, which I believe YouTube Music grabs from a Lyrics Freak. I think is where they get theirs from. Yeah, Lyrics Find. Sorry. So I just went to ANZ Lyrics for this song "Hang 'Em High," and they're quite different. On this one here we have a "Travels Light." Without a pack, without love. Yeah, without love. Where is it good? "Blasting out the night, he's terrified to drive," is what AZ Lyrics said. Here it says, "He comes from nowhere and he turns up his own." Yeah, sorry. His cap hides his eyes is from Lyrics Find. "He comes from nowhere, returns to his own." Yeah, he's terrified to drive is the lyric on this one. So he's terrified to drive, which would be weird for a cowboy. Or his his eyes.
Cowboys don't drive, they ride, right?
I know, right? And then he's laughing up his sleeve is on A to Z Lyrics. And here it was laughing up his scheme, which doesn't really make
a
ton of
sense. Laughing up his scheme. I'm looking on Google, and Google, their source is Music's Match.
Okay.
So.
What are they saying on Music Match?
On Music Match, it's that line in particular is "Leather Across the Slides, blasting out the night, his cap hides his eyes."
Okay, so that's the same
one,
as
one eye on the road, price upon his head, one ear to the ground, he's listening to the dead. Yeah.
Okay, so the one we had on the on the screen there could be correct, because AZ Lyrics is kind of up their own ass here, and that's where we kept getting fuck ups. That's where "Play Splat and Bone" was, so we stopped using them, but. I just thought that was interesting. We had another situation where there's some misunderstood lyrics there.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. And, you know, Google's not always right. And then, like, a lot of other sources aren't always, like, 100% correct because, you know, they most of the time they're guessing or they're just they have an in-tune ear to hear it correctly, because a lot of times certain artists don't put out their lyrics on their, like, their album booklets. A lot of them do, or they did for a while, but a lot of them did not. So it was kind of a, you have to really pay attention and really tune in to what the vocalists are singing and screaming about. So,
well, when we're done here tonight, I'm grabbing my vinyl copy of Diver Down, and I'm going to listen to the song again. I'm going to cross-reference. But before we do that, oh, Markimeyer, that can only mean one thing. It's time to play. How many times did Van Halen perform Hang 'Em High?
All right. Okay. I feel like this one should be easier. It's probably not, but I feel like it should be.
Well, you got to think, was this one ever, you know, was it done when they kind of got back together in 2012? Did they do it in 2015? You could pretty much discount, I think, the Sammy era. Did Gary do this one, though? Oh, geez, I don't know.
Don't know. Well, it's not, it wouldn't shock me if they brought this one back for, you know, 2015, considering there's not a ton of difficulty vocally, so, you know, Dave wouldn't be straining on this particular song. So, you know, and this is really a track for the instrumentalists. So with that in mind, I might go a little bit on the small. I'm gonna say they played this thing 80 times. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, that's not a bad guess. But
probably 50, isn't it?
Actually, I'm just kidding.
Bam. Oh. Just like that. That's all there.
You're 16 off. The correct 13 off. The correct answer is 93 times performed by Van Halen. So
I did it.
You did really good. Actually, 1982 is performed 84 times. If you go back to its original name, Last Night, in 76, 77, 78, it was performed another 7 times, and twice on the 2012 tour, at the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C., and at the TD Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. So that very last time it was performed, they had it nestled right in between Woman in Love and Beautiful Girls.
Oh, wow. Well,
yeah, right near the end of the set.
That's a hell of a spot for it.
Yeah.
You know? Give you, like, kind of a, because Women in Love's kind of a little more of a laid back atmosphere, and then you hit them with that, you hit them with Hang 'Em High, and then you tone it back a little bit more with Beautiful Girls. That's crazy.
Yeah,
we should wrap this up. We should indeed. So Hang 'Em High, that means we are not done with Diver Down quite yet. We still got one more.
Big Bad Bill.
Big, of course. That's the one everybody wants. But
everyone being Sean McGinnity for sure. Yeah, wants
Sean,
that one.
Sean McGinnity, and then, like, Tom, just because chaos, he said. So, everybody wants some. Hey, I want some too, but not yet. It's not going to happen. You're going to have to just wait. Until then, you're going to have to get down on Hang 'Em High. We are very closely done with the entire catalog, you guys. We have one more down, but we're not there yet. We still have several live shows we got to do because we have finished multiple albums. I believe the next one we got to talk about is For Unlawful.
Yeah, we're actually planning our big trivia night. It's going to happen the first week of April, so that second week of April, you guys will be able to catch that on YouTube and on the podcast feed. I think we have, like, 5 people maybe lined up now for trivia night, so hopefully we'll get some more lined up for that. And then a couple weeks after that, we're doing the For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge live show.
Hell yeah. And that's as you all know, Corey and I, that is an album near and dear to our hearts, just like Van Halen 2. And just like Van Halen 2, I assume this one's going to be a little bit difficult to rank as well, because the difference is, and I don't know how this is for you, Corey, you don't have to tip your hand, but I know that for me, there's no bad track on Van Halen 2.
Right.
For Unlawful, I would say there's no bad track, but there are less good tracks on there comparatively speaking. But so for me, it's going to be difficult The middle section is going to be real difficult, as opposed to what's going to be at the top of the list and at the bottom. But you guys be thinking about that, because that'll be the next live show that we get down on. And we love that album. We love talking about that album. And I am just very curious how our listeners and our friends are going to rank this, because I'm willing to bet it might be the most divisive one that we have done thus far. I could be wrong, but that's my prediction. Do you have a prediction?
Yeah, of the Sammy era, definitely. I know, fair warning, it was pretty divisive for a lot of people. Jeff Brewer, I'm looking at you. But for the Sammy era, for sure. And, of course, after For Unlawful, then we have the 5150 live show. Then we have the 1984 live show. So we got a few more left in the hopper we're going to have to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So be on the lookout for that, you guys. More announcements will be coming. Get your rankings. You don't have to get them in now, but be thinking about them.
They've been trickling in. I've got about five right now. So, and one person, I think it might have been, it was either one of the Scots or Jeff who said, I'm sending it in now so I don't fucking dwell on it for like a month like he did with the Van Halen 2 rankings. And I totally get that.
I get it too. I told you, I think I the one I landed on was my third draft. And I finally just said, that's the one. Just send it. Send it. Yeah. So I have a feeling For Unlawful is going to go in similar fashion.
I think so.
But we shall see. That is for the future us is to determine and to deal with. And that's not us. But we want to thank all of you guys for listening, your continued support, especially our lovely patrons. And I'm going to list all you off right now. So big thank yous to Matt Lacoste, to Nate from the Deep Purple Podcast, Rava Flave, Josh Caldwell, Greg Zito, Michael Griffith, Chaz Charles, Sean McGinnity, Kevin Brown, Per Lineker, Scott Monroe, Ryan Powell, Jeff Brewer, Tom Armbruster, Scott Everett, Heath McCoy, Janice Risco, Brad Gould, Michael Triplett, Davey Lee Smith, Chad Pollock, Brett Parker from Dissect That Film, Jeff Fitcher, and our buddy, the sexiest voice in podcasting, Scott Haskin. Thank you guys so much, man. You like all of your continued support and just everything you guys do, the conversations, it's wonderful. And if you want to join this murderer's row of awesomeness, join the Patreon. You'll get the Discord link, you'll get access to our shows, and you might even get to be on the show if you are in a right tier. Find a tier that's right for you. I guarantee you we have it. And if we don't, if you think we could do better, let us know. We'll find a tier for you. While you're at it, head on over to podcastwillrock.com. All of our backlog episodes are there, our socials in case you need to find us, emails, and most importantly, the merch store. Get yourself an Apologies to Gary t-shirt or, you know, whatever shirt that you that suits your fancy. I would just encourage you to get one of those, because as I say every week, I would love the army of Apologies to Gary. I would love that to just grow and grow and grow until Gary just can't hide from it anymore, and he must find out, what is the meaning of this? What is the reason? And you just got to direct him to this show, and maybe he'll like it, maybe he won't. Maybe he'll talk to us. That'll be fun. I would love to get an exclusive, like, Gary Cherone episode. That would just make me happy.
Oh, man.
And all of you make me happy when you guys you tune in, you support in whatever way that you can. It's always good. And speaking of support, if you like us, you might like some other podcasts that go into the rock band, the rockosphere, anything whatsoever. And Corey has got a rundown for you of those podcasts you might enjoy.
That's right, it's time for Podema, the pod roll. Here we go. First of all, you can check out myself on my other show with Kevin Brown called The Ultimate Catalog Clash. This season, we've been breaking down 90s Metallica. We just dropped the episode of Garage Inc. and S&M. Today, next week, you can catch out parts one and two of our season wrap-up show. Find out which one of us won season two of The Ultimate Catalog Clash. Find out which record was ranked the highest. And find out which artist we're going to be covering in season three. Of course, you can also check out Kevin Brown at the Tom Petty Project and with his buddy Randy Woods at Seaside Pod Review, talking all things Queen. Then we have Scott Haskin at Uriah Heep, the Magician's Podcast. Nate and John at the Deep Purple Podcast. The Simple Man at Skinnerd Reconsidered. Terry T-Bone Mathley at T-Bone's Prime Cuts. Rye at Sabbath Bloody Podcast. Paul, Joe, and David at In the Lap of the Pods. That's another Queen podcast. Andy and Matt at Hawk Binge, talking all things Hawkwind. Eric and Jonathan at Maiden A to Z. Daniel and Josh, at Diary of the Madman, the Ultimate Aussie Podcast. Ben and Sam at Universally Speaking, the Red Hot Chili Peppers Podcast. George and Hattie at the Judas Priest Cast. Clay and Rye at North by South Podcast. That's American Music versus Canadian Music. That's a lot of fun. Check that one out. Greg and Jonathan at So Far, So Pot, So What, talking about Megadeth. Then we have Quinn at In Volume for All. Sav, Nick, Steve, and Mark at the Rock Roulette Podcast. Chaz and Greg at Regarding Lulu. Chaz and Shats at Rush Rash. Chaz and Wolfie at Regarding Roger. And soon to come, Regarding Van Halen 3. Be on the lookout for that one. Then we have the Rewind to 1984 Podcast. The Sean Geek and Fast Fred Podcast. The DLR Cast, the Bogus Otis Show. Booked on Rock with the legendary Eric Senich. You're All Doomed, a Friday the 13th podcast. New to the pod roll this week, Spinning the Wheel Podcast. Another wheel catalog podcast, this time covering the catalog of George Michael. Go check that one out. And then, of course, our good friends at Dissect That Film, Three's Company 2, a rewatch podcast, and Pod of Thunder, the recognized symbol of excellence in rock and roll podcasting. If you listen to our live show, Chris L. from Pod of Thunder was on our live show, and I had mentioned that I had put one song on their listener submission list, a little Primus tune called Wynonna's Big Brown Beaver. Well, this week, they actually rolled Wynonna's Big Brown Beaver, and they talk about it on this week's Pod of Thunder. No spoilers, but it's a tremendous discussion. And that is all the podcast you should be listening to.
No spoilers for Wynonna's Big Brown Beaver, but
she strokes him all the time, I tell you.
Oh, that's good stuff. I'm going to tune into that. After that rundown, any podcasting rock band related needs you have to be met, like, you can find it here at the Deep Dive Podcasting Network. So be sure to check out any one of those or all of them if you have the time, because it's a lot. But they're great. They're awesome people. We love being part of this network, and we love interacting with you, the listener. You keep us going. The show is still on. Yeah, we might be dwindling down the wheel, but we still have much, much more left to go. So stay tuned, stay alert, and share. Share the experience. Let people know what we're doing. Let people know what you're listening to. They might become a fan as well. They'll join you and us in this journey. So on behalf of Corey and myself, we are And the Podcast Will Rock. And we will rock you later.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.